Okay, let's just begin effectively just a brief overview of what's happening. Next week, God willing, there's a special shiur on Sefer Melachim that's going to be given by this man, by Rabbi Alex Israel. It happens that I don't think I'll be able to be there just because it's the Yeshiva University High School dinner.
Oh.
And now that I have like two kids who are like in Yeshiva University High Schools, so I avoid dinners as much as I can, but sometimes you can't avoid it. So it works out well. I assume someone will take it. That should not be such a problem. So that is next week, and then after next week, I'd like to give a shiur or two just about the Yontiv of Passover. Which I'd scream now and loud, but Pesach is coming, and whatever, it comes whether or not we're ready, so it's better to be ready than not be ready. That's right. Sort of what we're up to. Okay, we're continuing our discussions of the Northern Kingdom. The Northern Kingdom had first a King Yeravam. He was not particularly good. We got Yeravam out of the way. Then there's a kingdom after Yeravam's son ruled. Then there's a kingdom of Baasha. Baasha also not particularly good. There's a rebellion against Baasha. Rebellion against Baasha's son Ela. And that rebellion is led by someone named Zimri. Zimri is Sar Machzis HaRechev. He's in charge of half of the chariots. And Zimri kills Ela. And then Zimri kills the entire house of Baasha. And a lot of different people have been dying and taking over his kingdom. And Zimri is king for the grand total of 7 days. No? That's the first pasuk that we have tonight. Right? In year 27, Mishnas Esen Resheva of King Asa, so Zimri is king for 7 days, and the people are camping on Gibton, which is in the Plishtim, and they hear that Zimri rebelled and killed the king, so they go and they appoint Omri, who is the general, and they appoint Omri to fight against. And then Omri comes and he attacks the city. And when Zimri sees, Pasuk Yudches, that the city's attacked, so he goes into the palace and he burns the entire palace and he dies. And then the Pasuk tells us that Zimri was really bad. Zimri followed all the things that Yeravam did. And we, I think, commented already that it's a little bit strange. How did Zimri do all of the things that Yeravam did? If this guy is king for a total of a week, it's hard to do that much in a week. Now, it's really, how many sins can you, it's almost like these Avera contests that are notorious.
That's a new one on me.
Who has
the Avera contest? Whatever, not for when the tape is on, but they have these, you have to be skilled to have 1 week and really do so many sins. But we're not talking about Zimri tonight. Tonight we're talking about Omri. And what's interesting to note is that the first we meet Omri is that Omri is this general who is rebelling against Zimri, no? And Zimri ends up burning the palace because he doesn't want to be captured, no? That's what we learned. Then the next psukim say at that point, Oz Yechalek Ha'am Yisrael Lachetzi, half of the people follow Tivni ben Ginat, and half of them followed Omri, and the people who followed Omri overpowered those that followed Tivni, and Tivni dies, and Omri is king. Okay, so now Omri is king. Now, that's the introduction to Omri. The pasuk does not tell us why it is that Omri overpowered Tivni ben Ginat, no? There's terrible power struggles. The power struggles are awful, correct? It's really, really bad. Zimri was king for a week, overthrown, then there's like some power struggle, not clear how long it goes on for. You get an impression from some other pasuk it went on for 4 years, and then suddenly Omri wins, and Omri is the next king that we'll talk about, but it's not clear why it is that Omri overcame the Tivni. Why is that? Omri becomes the leader. So if you'll take a look at the Tosefta in Sota, it's the first source that I give you after the Pesukim. Pardon me. The Tosefta has a very interesting comment, which doesn't really have any scriptural basis, but assuming that it's correct, which it's a statement of Chazal, it's in the Tosefta, so it adds a lot of meaning. Right? The Tosefta writes, "Kevan shehisi asa melech Yehuda es bito shel Omri melech Yisrael lihoshafat beno leisha." Okay, let's try to follow that sentence. Asa is the king of Yehuda, and Asa has his son Yehoshaphat, who's going to be the next king, marry the daughter of Omri. Now, this is fascinating, no? You see, we have two warring kingdoms, the north and the south. And the next in line to be king in the north is marrying the daughter of... Right, the next in line, king of the south, is marrying the daughter of the king of the north. I think that just pshuto shel anything, assuming this Tosefta is correct, what we see over here is... What we see over here is, first of all, that Omri could rise to power because he is, so to speak, being drafted by the other king. And that shows that he's a respected figure. No?
Yeah.
That shows he's a respected figure. So that could be part of the missing story. You also get the impression, though, that the pasuk keeps on repeating about Omri, that it says a few times, Es Ha'am. Omri is a man of the people. Omri is a populist. And that is what makes Omri qualified, or why Omri becomes the king, because people like him, because he takes over as king. So that is the first thing we have about Omri. Now, let's continue our discussion about Omri. Right? Pasuk Chaf Gimel through Chaf Ches is all that we know about Omri. So let's read these Pesukim carefully. Or not so carefully, let's just read them as it may be. Year 31 of Asa, so Omri is the king for 12 years. He ruled in Tirza for 6 years. Now, then, Pasuk Chof Dalet says that he buys a hill of Shomron from a man named Shemer, and he pays 2 talents of silver for it. Vayiven Esahar, he builds up the mountain, and he calls the city that he builds on the name of Shemer, who was the owner of that mountain. And Omri is bad. He is worse than all those who were before him. He follows Yerubbaam and all of his sins. He gets God angry. And everything else that Omri did is written in the history books. Omri dies and he's buried in Shomron. That's the whole story of Omri. The one thing we know about Omri is he builds a city called Shomron. Now, why did Omri do this? Why did Omri move the capital from Tirza to Shomron?
Protection.
Protection. Okay. And we'll talk about that. In other words, Tirza is, first of all, an old Canaanite city. Tirza is a little bit off the beaten track. Shomron is right on the main road to the land of the Pelishtim. It's a more centralized area. So he moves the capital to a more centralized area, but he's worried.
It's,
what?
Why do you want to be close to the Pelishtim?
Why do you want to be close to Pelishtim? Okay. Answer.
That's why I'm asking.
He's trying to build an alliance with other nations. This is the conjecture that he develops, that the moving of the capital from Tirza to Shomron is because he wants to be closer to the Plishtim. We're going to see that Omri's son is the infamous Achav. Achav marries the daughter of a Plishti prince. Sidon is?
Same as Plishtim.
Isn't that one of the Plishtim there? I think so. I could be totally off base. If I am, that will sort of mess up my entire presentation. but basically, we'll see that as we go on. Now, so one approach is that he wants a new centrally located capital. But what was wrong with the old capital? What's wrong with Tirzah?
Too many bad associations with Zimri and
better.
The palace was burned.
It was just burned.
Yeah.
Presumably when you burn the palace, right, the city didn't fare too well. So this is not a city that you want to live in. So what Omri does is he spends the time to build a new city. This is a planned city. Right? It says that he's king in Tirzah for 6 years, but the city had been burned before he took over. So he's planning a new major city to live in. That is to be the capital. This is Omri's plan that we see in these psukim. The main thing we know about Omri from Tanakh is that Omri built a city called Shomron. We do know from other sources that Omri was a world figure. No? Omri, we know from the Misha stele, which is approximately 850 BCE. It's a rock that they found with inscriptions. And they uncovered the fact that Omri conquered Moab. So he's a known figure because we have a rock with his name on it. So he's actually, right, historically very important. But from Tanakh, the most important thing about Omri is that he built a city called Shomron. Now, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, source number 2 after the Pesukim, Omri Reb Yochanan, Mipnei Omri Reb Yochanan, Mipnei Mazocha Omri Lamalchus. Why did Omri become the king? Mipnei shahosif krach echad be'eretz Yisrael, shenema vayiken etahar shomron me'ed shemer b'kikrem kesef vayiven etahar vayikrat shem ha'ir right asher bonal shem shemer adonai ha'har shomron. Right. In other words, the Gemara says that the reason why Omri became the king is because he built a city in Israel, and that's a good thing. This, by the way, is just like Zionism 101. Ooh, right? A city in Israel, Eretz Yisrael, Tehora, Shleima, right? You can imagine, like, the... I don't know, I shouldn't make stereotypes. So the short, like, Hebrew teacher that you had, like, in elementary school, you know what I'm talking about. It's like a lot, right? Okay, fine. Now, they were still around. There are certain people who were born when they were 85 and lived to the age of like 95, and it's amazing that they didn't age in the 97 years that they're alive. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You didn't have
it in Broyers. In Broyers, you
didn't
have
them.
We will name you Palestine. We do not recognize Israel. Right. Now, the fact is, the Gemara says that what Omri did to deserve to be king is that he expanded, he built a city in Israel. Let's just focus on this for a minute. What's the problem with this Gemara? This Gemara is highly problematic.
It would be an argument if he did it before he became king.
Right, in other words, he's king. He's king for 6 years when the city is built. And then he became king because he built a city. Like, hello, that's not the way the sequence of events goes. So the Maharsha is bothered by this kasha on the Gemara. Right? The Maharsha asks this kasha on the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Maharsha answers... The Maharsha answers that the Gemara is really asking not how come Omri was king, but how come Omri Omri's line of kings lasted longer than other kings and their lines. Most kings have two and out. Yeravam, Avia. Basha, right? Ela, right? Two and out. It happens that Omri was three and out. How come he had his grandson become king also? Ooh. Answer, he built a city.
But there's another problem, because right after Chabalat is the last Omri Harav in Hashem.
This is the complex picture of Omri, that if he's such a good guy because he built a city in Israel, how come the next pasuk is saying how bad he was? So again, I would argue, this is my Zionism teacher 101 again, that, you know, you could hear the Zionistic argument that a person has tremendous merit for building a city in Israel, even though that person is, on the religious level, quite decrepit. Right? That's what I could hear, and that seems to be the simple meaning of the Gemara. The alternative, by the way, to this Gemara is that how come Omri became king? It's because God knew that he would build the city. That's why God made him king. Right? We have statements in Chazal to this effect. Now, a few issues. Did Omri really build a city? Let's read this pasuk carefully. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Vayiken et ha'har Shomron. He buys the mountain from Shemer. He builds a mountain. He names the city that he builds the name of Shemer, who is the owner of Har Shomron. So, you could read the pasuk that he purchased a mountain and he built a city. Look at the Targum on this pasuk. Look at the Targum. Targum writes, Vizavan Yas Kracha Dil Shomron Mim Shemar, etc. Betartin Kikrin de Kesef. He buys the city of Shomron. Right? In Aramaic, a mountain is a Tura. Is a mountain. Tura. He didn't buy a Tura, he bought a Kracha. Right? In other words, the Targum is reading the Pasuk that he bought a city of Shomron. That would mean that Omri did not actually build this city, but what Omri did is he enhanced it. He made it larger. He improved it. No?
How much is 2 talents of silver worth?
No idea. A lot, yeah, probably.
How much is the Megillah?
What?
I mean,
So again, this would kick Ryan. Oh yeah, in the Megillah, someone sent me an email to figure out how much a kikar kesef is. Like, how much would be 10,000 kikar kesef? This is 2 kikar of kesef. Someone sent me a calculation of how much it's worth. I'd have to look at it. I don't remember. But you're saying it might be like the purchase of Manhattan Island.
Yeah.
getting a good deal. I don't know. But the fact is, according to the Targum, he's purchasing a city. He's not purchasing a mountain. Is that clock totally stopped yet? It's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. So, this is actually important. You know, the story later on in Sefer Melachim speaks about how they were formed at Tzoraim and they were outside of the city of Shomron. Right, and Geicha, that's a whole story later on. Now, how come they're outside of Shomron? So, Alpi Halacha, there's a din that if you have Tzara'as, you're not allowed to be inside cities. You have to be outside the city. But, you don't have to be outside of every city. You only have to be outside of a city that was Mukaf Choma from the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. That's the Mishnayos at the beginning of Kalim. You only have to be outside of a city that had a wall from the days of Yehoshua. If it would be that Omri actually built the city for the first time, so then those Mitzoraim would not have to be outside of Shomron. Because Shomron was built by Omri. There was no city beforehand. It was not a city at the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. Right? The only reason they have to be outside of the city is because...
he never built it.
Is because he bought a city.
Right.
And if he bought a city, maybe the city that he bought had a wall from the days of Yehoshua. Right? Rebbe Akiva Eger, in the first parak of Kalim, actually points this out. Rebbe Akiva Eger is brilliant. He points this out, right, on the Mishnah that says that a Metzora has to be outside of the city. So he says, oh, by the way, whether or not Shomron, right, he gives you this whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel. Now,
at the end of the talk, it says Debona, uses the word Bona.
Use the word Bona, yeah.
Usually it says Vazabin, and then towards the end it says Debona.
But Ubona Yas Kracha means, and he built up the city. In other words, he bought the city, and then he built it up. Right, I think what that means is that he enhanced it, he expanded it, etc. Now, the simple reading over here of Chazal is that Omri, with all of his failings, right, he was pretty bad, like the Psukim say, he followed all the things that Yeravam did. With all those failings, he had one mile, he built a city, it sounds like it's a good thing. There are a few indications that Omri is good, at least with respect to building the city. Right? What are these indications?
But just building a city, that's not newsworthy.
Not newsworthy. But he built a new capital. It's not just a city, it's a new capital. So that, I think, is more newsworthy.
Yeah.
It's a large city. It's an impressive city. It's a city, by the way, that the Assyrians could not capture. It was so fortified. So there's something to it.
Okay.
But what are some of the positive elements that we could just see from the Psukim? So if you read Pasuk Chof Dalet, Vayiken es Hahar Shomron, he bought mountain. Now, that is newsworthy, because if I'm a king, sometimes I could walk over it, you know, I could say, give me. I'm taking it, no? Eminent domain. And the Psukim in Sefer Shmuel says this about a king, that a king is going to come and take away your vineyards, etc. No? He doesn't do that. That, in some ways, is positive. The Das Mikra Tanakh points out another positive element, which is he names the city after who? The previous owner. If I am named Trump, I name everything after the new owner. Trump bought it. It now used to be called the Rockefeller Museum. Used to be called the White House. Now it's the Trump House. Or whatever. Right? You name everything after yourself if you're a megalomaniac. Correct?
So obviously Omri wasn't.
So this is not so bad about Omri. Right? In other words, the statement of Chazal that's finding a positive element in Omri, I think, can be found by reading Pasuk Chof Dalet carefully. It happens so that the Malbim takes the approach that Omri was really negative. Even purchasing the city is a bad thing, and he writes as follows. The capital of the southern kingdom is
Yerushalayim.
The capital of the northern kingdom is going to be Shomron. The difference between the name Yerushalayim, the shorish of the name is Yira, is fear. This city is built, right? Yira, Yera'eh, Shalem, right? The city's name reflects the values of Shlemut and the values of Yirat Shamayim. The values of Shomron are cash. So the Malbim takes a very negative approach. Right here, if you...
But David also bought...
David also bought the city from Aravna Hayavusi, right? But it's called Yerushalayim. In other words, that's precisely the point, that right, the southern kingdom's capital is built on values. The northern kingdom's capital is not... there's no values here. That's the point that the Malbim's making. Here, look at the Malbim. It's on the third page. Vayikra Shem Ha'ir Al Shem Shemer, says the Malbim, Moreha Hevdel Ben Yerushalayim Shenikres Lezikaron Yira Ushleimus Ubein Shomron Shenikra Al Shem Adam Bliyal. You can see the difference between Yerushalayim that's called based on Ozikaron, to remember Yira Shleimus values, and Shomron that's named after a bad person. So that, I think, is that I think is the comment of the Malbim. Again, my understanding, though, is that the Gemara's comment is that they're finding something positive about Omri, despite the fact that there's so much that he did bad. Let's go on for a minute. Omri, Pasuk Chof Hei. Omri did bad in the eyes of Hashem, and he's worse from all those before him. Now, what did Omri do that's so bad? If anything, we just said that Omri's good, right? This was your question, yeah. Right? So, how's he worse than all those before him? So, the Ralbag over here, again, time is getting late, so I guess we're not going to read this Ralbag inside, but the Ralbag's comment is that Omri is worse than all those who are before him, because the Pasuk doesn't really tell you about the really bad stuff that he did. Oh, there's such bad stuff, we can't even tell you. Yes, sir.
If you look at,
isn't that conjecture?
Yes.
Okay. If you look at the next Pasuk, Chashvav, it tells you why he's bad.
Well, he's bad. No, but the Pasuk says he's worse than all those who were before him.
No.
And then the next Pasuk says, and he did all the stuff that Yeravam did. I just say that he did all the stuff that Yeravam did, I apologize, I'm a little tired, so I'm going to sit down.
Right.
But if I just say he did all the stuff that Yeravam did, that doesn't mean he's worse than Yeravam. How is he worse than Yeravam? So the Malbim adds that obviously he also did additional sins that the Pasuk doesn't mention. Right, that's what the Ralbag is adding.
He didn't learn any lesson.
Okay. Also, the second explanation of the Ralbag is that he didn't learn any lesson. In other words, you see what happened to your brother. You see what happened to Basha. Idiot! Right, you're doing the same thing they did. Right? You don't learn, right? You don't learn from what happened to them. Idiot! So you're worse than them. Right? Because they at least had half of a brain. Right? So they didn't realize that they would suffer. That's his comment.
But he died of natural causes. He wasn't condemned to be licked up by the dogs or
something. Okay. I mean, that certainly that's part of it. But I'd like to make a suggestion based on the Tosefta that we began with. The Tosefta said that Omri's daughter married Yehoshaphat, right? The king in the southern kingdom is married to Omri's daughter. Now, that means that there's a certain link between them. What was one of the major sins of Yeravam? He built these calves, and he says, I don't want people to go to Aliyah Larego to Yerushalayim, because apparently he's worried that they'd go to Yerushalayim and they'd see the other king, and they would say, oh, that guy's the real king, not me. In other words, that there's like a real war between these two kingdoms, and you're worried you don't want your kingdom to lose. Now that Omri, so to speak, is really connected to that kingdom, he had less to be scared of. Because he's really, right, we could say we're one family. We are one family. Yehoshaphat married my daughter. And you're still not letting people go to be Ola Regel. That's worse. Right? In other words, if you're doing an Avera with an excuse, that's okay, it's an Avera with an excuse. Here, you don't have an excuse. What are you worried about? People going to go to be Ola Regel? So what? Let them go. Right? It won't take anything away from you. You made it, dude. Right? Your daughter married in. You made it. So apparently, fine. Now, throughout this perek, just the last point about Omri, it says Chatato and Chatatav. You see that? In Pasuk Chavav. It's like in parentheses. Chatato would mean that he did one sin. Chatatav means he did many sins. It could be that the idea is that he only did one major sin called Avodah Zarah. But Avodah Zarah is such a severe sin that it's the equivalent of doing many different sins. Okay, let's go on. I want to talk about Achav now.
If we learn that what is our one of the three cardinal sins?
Oh yeah.
Then why did he die of natural causes?
You see, that's a question that we can't fully answer. There are so many factors that could go into why a person dies of natural causes, is killed, etc. We don't know.
But
all we know is
sin.
Yes, but all we know is the text that we have in front of us. I can't. That's asking why God did what God did. I can't answer those questions. Tish B'yad Nechushio. That's right. And we're going to start talking about Eliyahu later, maybe even tonight a bit. Fine, let's go on. Achav is the king. He is the king in year 38 of Asa. Achav, the son of Omri, is king in Shomron for 22 years. Chazal say that the number 22, this is a Gemara in Sanhedrin I give you, it's a continuation of that same Gemara that we read a minute ago. 22 is a number that represents the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis. Apparently, even Achav, who is quite the, he's really bad, but the Gemara says, I'm Reb Yochanan, how come Achav is king for 22 years? Because he honored the Torah that had 22 letters. Right? Ben Hadad, the king, wanted the Sefer Torah, etc. Achav says no. Right? So, Achav gets 22 years of reign because he reigned in the sense of R-E-I-G-N, right? Because he, right, we'll talk about the reign in the other sense later on, but because he honored the Torah, and that's an amazing thing, despite the fact that Achav is quite awful, right? Certainly not Jewish, but you see even some indications. I think Chazal are trying to get us to view the world in a more complicated sort of way. Even those figures who appear bad, Omri, Achav, these are the worst of the worst, right? The deepest of the deep, right? Like the Rebbe Reb Shlomo would say. These are, like, nonetheless, Chazal are looking specifically to find something about them because they don't want us to have a simplistic approach to life. And they want us to be bothered by these questions, good or bad. Those are exactly the types of questions we're supposed to ask. Fine. So Achav is king for 22 years. Pasuk Lamed, Achav does bad in the eyes of God. Mikol Hashelofanav, he's worse than all those before him. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Hanakel Lechto B'chatos Yeravam Ben Nevat. The lightest of his sins are the same sins of Yeravan. In other words, he really goes to town. He marries Izebel, the daughter of Etbal, the king of Sidon, and he goes and he serves Baal and he bows down to Baal. He builds a Mizbeach for Baal, which is called Beit Baal, and he builds it in Shomron. Achav builds an Asherah, so he builds Baal and Asherah, and he does terrible things. He gets God angry, etc. And then we'll talk about Pasuk Lamed Aleph in a minute. So what Achav does is he marries Izebel, and there are sins of Baal, which is in Avodah Zarah, and Asherah, which is an Avodah Zarah tree, or a fertility god. There are different approaches to what to what Asherah is. Fine. Just a few things about Achav. Baal. He marries Izebel, the daughter of Etbaal. Baal is an Avodah Zarah. His wife's father has the name Etbaal. Etbaal is a name that has Baal at the end of it. Many names in religions have God at the end of the name. Gidalia, Yeshaya, Adoniah, right? We could go Chizkiyah, Yoshiyah, or Yoshiyahu, or Chizkiyahu. But these are all God's names, is appended to many names, right? And Et Baal has his God's name appended at the end of his name. No? That means that this guy is really connected to Baal. And Achav goes, and Achav marries Izebel, and Baal becomes the official religion of the land. So much so that Izebel, the Pesukim are going to say later, tries to eradicate all of the worship of Hashem. It's only Baal. Baal is the official religion. Nothing else. What? Right, correct. We'll talk about that. Yeah? And we'll talk about all that, correct.
Was it just in the north?
This is just in the north, right? In the south, they're still worshipping Hashem. Now, effectively, this means something. You see, Avodah Zarah was a common sin at this time. But usually, people were doing what Dr. Lim always used to speak about. They were doing syncretism. Right? In other words, that they're worshipping two gods at the same... I just learned the word from him, so I always say it in his accent. They were worshipping Hashem and Avodah Zarah. That was true at many other times in Jewish history. What's unique about the time of Achav is that they weren't even worshipping Hashem anymore. Baal becomes the official religion. The Malbim over here comments that there are two sins of Achav. There's Baal and Asherah, but Baal is much worse than Asherah. Asherah is an Avodah Zarah tree that sometimes was built next to Mizbeach for Hashem, which is syncretism, that you're worshipping God and you also have the Avodah Zarah, that you're hedging your bets. No? Only worshipping Baal is much worse. That's why Eliyahu HaNavi, at his famous episode of Har Carmel, Eliyahu HaNavi, right, challenges the Nevi'eh HaBaal. He's not challenging the Nevi'eh HaAsherah. Because Baal is much worse than... Baal is much worse than Asherah. Good? Now, a few other points to be made about Achav. Achav marries Izebel. She is awful. And worship of Hashem is really not being done. It's all worshiping Baal. By the way, in his book, in Alex Israel's book, he quotes from William Albright. Right? Let me just read you this paragraph, because I think it really sets the tone. In judging the frequent triumphs of Canaanite polytheism in Israel, we must always bear in mind that polytheism had a popular appeal in many ways, like that of the dominant secularism of our own age. The wealth, science, and aesthetic culture of that age were lined up on the side of Canaanite religion. Compared with Phoenicia, the lands of Judah and Israel were poor, rustic, far behind the spirit of the day in fashions, art of civilization, and material pleasures of life. All the sinister fascination of the elaborate proto-sciences of magic and divination were marshaled in defense of polytheism against the stern, almost savage simplicity of Mosaic theology. Now, what that means is, I think what he's trying to say, is we shouldn't judge them so harshly by becoming Avodah Zarah, because really what they're doing is they are just connecting to the dominant culture. Baal is viewed as being part of the dominant culture, and like we mentioned with Umri, that he moves the kingdom from Tirzah to Shomron because he wants to be more connected to Phoenicia, right? He wants his world to orbit in the western, the more advanced, more cosmopolitan society, and a result of that is Baal comes along. But you could give a Musar Shmuz from this really easily. But that, again, Musaf coming from Albright, you know, maybe would carry more weight than Musaf coming from someone with a long beard. Just saying. So that is the next point. Now, Baal is a Avodah Zarah that is associated with rain. In Chazal, a field that grows on rain is called the Steh HaBaal. Right? Baal is the male god that, so to speak, fertilizes the ground. Asherah becomes pregnant. Right? Yiv Aluch, Baal, it's husbandry, it's right, a male type of idea. That is Baal. You understand now why Eliyahu Hanavi, when he comes on the scene, says there's going to be no rain. Because if I'm attacking Baal, and I'm attacking the god of rain, no? I'm going to say, it ain't happening, dude. Right? That, I think, is the next point that we wanted to make. Oh. Let's just read one more pasuk, pasuk Lamed Daled. The pasuk says, B'yamav, in the days of Achav, Banachi el Beit Ha'eli et Yericho, Baviram Bechoro Yista, Ubiskuv Tziro Hitziv Dilateha, Kidva Hashem Ashedibeh B'yah Yehoshua Benun. In other words, in the days of Achav, Chiel Beis Ha'eli tries to build Yericho. Yehoshua made a curse that anyone who builds Yericho, his children will die. This fell Chiel Beit Ha'eli builds Yericho, and son number one dies when he lays the foundation. Aviram dies when he lays the foundation. Skuv dies when he sets up the gates, which is exactly what Hashem told Yehoshua. Now, what is the connection over here to Achav and the Chiyo Beit Ha'eli building Yericho?
Licentiousness.
So a complete lack of morals. Usually one of the last things that goes is the fear of curses. Like usually people, okay, so I'm not going to be religious, but those curse things that are out there, I'm not going to violate those. Now they're even violating the curses of Yehoshua ben Nun. And based on that, right, the children die. But you see how far the nation descended. That, I think, is right, one approach to this. And they're all accurate. But I think there's another approach that we can say. What did Yericho what was Yericho? So Yericho is the first city that the Jewish people conquer when they enter the land. And the walls of Jericho came tumbling down in place, and it was almost like a monument to God's miraculous leading of the people into the land. So Yehoshua ben Nun says, I don't want you to build up Yericho, because I want you to have a respect for Jewish history, a respect for God's intervention. Right? This is the monument of, right? You look at this and like everyone says, oh wow, you know, Yericho. Right? We know the whole story. By building Yericho, you are actually doing something even worse than Avodah Zarah, if that's possible. Because you are erasing your connection to history. By building Yericho, you see, Yericho represented the monument to, oh, we enter. This is the first city we conquer, we enter Israel. This shows the miracle of God making the walls fall down. Everyone looks at Yericho and they say, oh, this is Jewish history, this is where it begins. This is our museum, right? And it's a museum of God's intervention. By building the city up, you are erasing that record. And on a certain level, that might be even worse than Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, okay. Right? It's not okay, but Avodah Zarah is, right, it's bad. But on a certain level, right, if you worship Avodah Zarah but you still have a sense of Jewish history, okay. But to try to erase that makes it even worse.
They would explain the middle connected middle of the punishment that he loses all his sons. His own legacy is wiped out.
His own, right. If you want to erase the history, we'll wipe out your legacy. I think that's a very nice insight. Now, two other points. Chiel Beis Ha'eli. He comes from Beis El. Beis El is a city in the southern kingdom, not in the northern kingdom. No? Chiel is not in Achav's territory. But Achav's evil influence is extending into Malchus Yehuda. Yericho is in the Nachal of Sheva Binyamin. It is in the southern kingdom. And the evil influence of Achav is extending beyond his own his own kingdom. The Shidduch that we mentioned, right, is part of it. Yehoshaphat married Omri's daughter, but the fact is, this makes Achav even worse. Chazal, by the way, the Gemara in Sanhedrin comments on the next pasuk, Eliyahu Hanavi, right, turns to Achav and he says, if there's going to be rain, right, there won't be rain. There won't be rain. Chazal say that Eliyahu met Achav at the Shiva that Chio is sitting for his sons. Chio is sitting Shiva for his sons who died in the building of Yericho. And at the Shiva, the conversation is, one second, how come the curse of Yehoshua came true? That if you build Yericho, your children will die. And the curse of Moshe Rabbeinu, that if you serve Avodah Zarah, there won't be rain. How come that curse didn't come true? So Eliyahu says, oh, there won't be rain, right? Eliyahu says, oh, good idea, right? Good gazak, there's not going to be any rain. In other words, right, that Gemara in Sanhedrin, I give you the Gemara, time is late, so we won't read the whole thing inside, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin basically makes this point, that the story of Chiel is in some ways the link between Achav and Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi just like appears out of, in random, no? The Chazal say Eliyahu is like Pinchas. Pinchas also, Vayoka mitocha eida, vigach romach biyado, go, chick-chack, boom, right? Just appears. Like, that's what a kanoi is. Not someone who's like preparing for leadership. You don't go to all these seminars. You just go. You get into it, no? That's Eliyahu HaNavi. The event that triggered Eliyahu HaNavi's appearance is Chiel Beis Ha'eli, who tries to build Yericho, buries his sons, the Shiva. This is the Gemara's creative read on how, right, on how come Eliyahu appears on the scene. So these are some of the points that we wanted to make. Again, thank you for listening, Chevra. Have a good night.